This is the 12 Songs of Christmas. I'm Alex Rawls, and today I'm talking to fellow podcaster Scott Leopold about his podcast, Holly Jolly Xmasu, and its subject, Japanese Christmas songs. I've talked on the show with people from other countries and cultures about how Christmas music travels around the world, but this is my first time talking about Japanese Christmas music. One reason I've done little with it is because it's not always easy to find, and when I find it, I'm not always sure what I have. I've included a fun version of Last Christmas by Kano Kaoli on some Christmas mixes, but I now need to listen more closely to the compilation titled Perfect Christmas to find out what else is there. As Scott will explain, his show and fascination with Japanese Christmas music started as he tried to track down one album, Drum Christmas Drum by Akira Ishikawa and Floral Pop 70. Collectors will recognize his story and the way the hunt for one thing opens up a number of alleys and other pursuits, each of which has its own rewards and fuels additional hunts. And that's how soon enough you end up with one whole wall dedicated to Christmas music. I'm glad we could do this because our conversation and his show have already sent me in search of some of these songs. But as he points out, a lot of this material isn't available through conventional streaming and downloading sites. So for many of us, this will be the one time and place where we get to hear these songs, or we listen to his podcast more. Once we finished recording, Scott said that on his podcast, he planned to finish the first season with music from Drum Christmas Drum. It was kind of, the search was the thing that drove the podcast in the first place, but since he realized midway through the season that there could be more and that his collection had grown exponentially, he changed his mind and is now saving the object of his obsession for some point down the road. We're not waiting. So that you can put some of the story in context, we'll start with it. This is a psychedelic jazz pop version of Here Comes Santa Claus from 1970s Drum Christmas Drum by Akira Ishikawa. I'll be back on the other side with Scott Leopold of Holly Jolly Xmasu. To start with, short version, what's your story?
So, I've always collected Christmas music. Growing up, my mom played it year round. So, you know, when I got to be like high school, college age, had money my own, I started buying my own music because I was kind of tired of, you know, listening to the same three records every single year. And throughout college, I'd buy a bit more here and there. I didn't go real nuts about it. And then, you know, when file sharing got to be a big deal, that's when I started collecting like crazy. I started downloading everything I could get my hands on. And that kind of got me connected with the Christmas music community online, like King of Jingling on the Fa La 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 website, Ernie from Ernie Not Bert. I mean, not all those guys. And so over the course of several years, I went from, you know, having a modest collection to having tens of thousands of songs. And back in like 2011, 2012, something like that, somebody mentioned this album they had found called Drum Christmas Drum by a guy in Japan named Akira Ishikawa. And people started talking about it like it was the holy grail of collecting. There are a few people who had copies, but nobody was sharing it. So that kind of got me a little obsessed with finding a copy of this album. And over the next few years, I was able to get downloads of a couple of the songs. I was able to hear clips of a couple others. And it kind of blew me away that here's this fantastic album that in Japan, people have known about since, you know, the early 70s. And over in America, nobody really knew about this thing. So it really got me interested, not only in finding that album, but I started to hear about these other albums. I do these searches and names would come up like Jimmy Takeuchi, Jun Fukamachi, Jackie Yoshikawa, and just all these names that there were apparently these unbelievable Christmas albums out there that, you know, not only did I have no way of hearing them, but it started kind of growing this obsession with finding these things and hearing what these people over in Japan were talking about, because I started finding sites where collectors over there were talking about them as though these were the just most unbelievable things they'd ever heard. Well, after, you know, 7 or 8 years of trying to find Drum Christmas Drum and not being able to hear it, I got to the realization that if I wanted to not only hear Akira Ishikawa's album, but some of these other albums, I was going to have to break down and actually buy them. So 2019 rolls around. For record store day that year, the old King Records out of Cincinnati, they had a compilation back in the 50s called Merry Christmas. I think it was Merry Christmas from King Records. And for Record Store Day, they re-released that as one of the Record Store Day releases. So I decided, we had an old record player that it had been sitting there collecting dust. My wife hadn't played it, hadn't done anything with it. So I was like, well, I'll go ahead, I'll get this this King Records compilation and put the record player to good use. And Christmas comes and goes. I had a little money left over. And I told my wife, I was like, you know, I ought to go ahead and try ordering some of these albums from Japan. So I find a little shop over there, Record City. They had, they did not have Akira Ishikawa, but they had a couple other records I had heard of. I went ahead and ordered Jackie Yoshikawa and the Blue Comets Christmas album, a record by Terry Takeuchi and the Bunnies, a compilation from the mid-70s called Christmas by four folk artists. I have to look them up. I can't remember the names right now. And then I found a 12-inch single from the 80s, Christmas Time in Blue, by Motoharu Sano. So I go ahead, I place this order, and I get these records in, and they were fantastic. And it just blew me away that, you know, it really is an entirely different world of Christmas music that I just had never had any real insight into.
Yeah. I want to stop right there kind of for that reason, because I was going to say, I want to know what fantastic meant to you, because there are times where like songs are fantastic for me because they are so perfectly executed and they are, you know, such remarkable performances. Like Nancy Wilson's version of the Christmas Waltz is, you know, fantastic for me. But there's also songs that are just so outside my circle that I can't grasp what's happening. But it's so clearly intentional, and it asks so many questions that's equally fantastic to me, and that it's something that all new for me to think about. And so when you say these records are fantastic, in what way were they fantastic?
The Jackie Yoshikawa and Terry Takeuchi, they were group sounds bands. So it's kind of like Ventures-esque music, kind of surf rock, garage rock. And it just superbly done music. Jackie Yoshikawa and Terry Takeuchi were about two of the best group sounds artists. So their albums were pretty much full of Christmas standards, and they were just done in a way that I hadn't heard before. Instead of being Ventures clones, they went a little beyond what some of the other group sounds bands did, and they were a lot better than, you know, just these groups who wanted to sound just like the Ventures. They were doing something of their own. Terry Takeuchi and the Bunnies, their version of Jingle Bells is it's crazy. It has like there's girls like cheering the band on and chanting and saying their names and whatnot. It's just one of the craziest versions of the song you're going to hear. I started finding more and more originals that they're great songs. And that album Christmas, it was put out by 4Life Records. It's a mix of Christmas standards, some traditional like Japanese New Year songs, and then a couple original songs are on the album. And these were four folk artists who by the mid 70s were four of the biggest artists in Japan. So big that they broke away from their traditional standard record label setup, and they formed their own label, which artists just did not do at the time. And being four of the biggest artists at the time, they knew they were going to be a huge success. End of the year rolls around and they're struggling. It was a bigger undertaking than they expected. They weren't bringing in the money they thought they would. So kind of like an old, an old Hollywood movie, they said, hey, let's get together. Let's put on a Christmas show. Except in this case, it was a Christmas album. And they were banking on this being a huge success in order to save their company. And they'd said, well, you know, each of us individually will typically sell 100, 125,000 copies. They go, the four of us together, it's got to sell 300,000 copies. So their expectation was, we're going to sell 300,000 copies. That's going to save the label. And wouldn't you know it, they put it out. They print 300,000 copies of this record, and it's a huge hit. It's a sellout. It's been a perennial bestseller pretty much ever since then. So it got them their Christmas miracle. It saved the label. And it ended up being this just fantastic album.
Oh, that's great.
So it's definitely one worth tracking down.
Cool. Did you ever successfully get a copy of Drum Christmas Drum?
Not only did I get a copy of it, it was, you know, after I placed that order with Record City, and well, a month and a half later, pandemic hits. So that ends, you know, I get there, nothing to do, just time on my hand. I go ahead and place another order. The second order I placed, I was able to get a copy of it. And looking into it, researching the album, I found out that it was released like six different times on vinyl. Since then, I've managed to get every single copy on vinyl.
Wow.
So I have I don't have the CD. The CD costs more than I want to spend, but I do have every vinyl release of the album.
Oh, that's great. So we're going to circle back into this, your relationship to Christmas music and particularly Japanese Christmas music. But I got into found you because I found your podcast. Is it Holly Jolly Christmasu?
Holly Jolly Xmasu.
Xmasu. Okay. Why did you start podcasting?
The pandemic hits, everything just kind of ground to a halt. Prior to that, I've got four daughters. I was on the go constantly, and I went from, waking up at 4 a.m, staying up till 10 o'clock at night, just running nonstop with my kids, to suddenly having nothing to do. Insomnia set in, and I had tons of time on my hand, and nothing to do. And it was literally driving me nuts. I'd been listening to a couple Christmas podcasts, Christmas Past and Can't Wait for Christmas. And I had this growing collection of albums. And I just needed something to not only keep my mind off of what was going on in the world, but just something to keep me busy. So I got a hold of Brian Earle, who does the Christmas Past podcast, and he gave me some advice, and I just went ahead and wrote up an episode, put something out there, and told myself, set a schedule, stick to it, and just keep doing it. And I figured, I'll do this for a year, maybe 2 years, get through a lot of the best albums I'd found at that point. But by the end of that first year, I'd gone from having, a dozen or so Japanese albums to having several dozen. And I realized I can keep this going for, more than a year or two. So I went from putting out an album every month to putting out anywhere from 2 to 4 episodes each, and my collection has grown since then from several dozen to about 1,200 different albums, CDs, and singles.
Oh wow, good for you!
Yeah, so it's I ended up making friends with a couple of the collectors over there, and I told the one, I was like, and this was actually several months ago. I was like, at this point, I guarantee I have the best collection of Japanese Christmas music outside of Japan.
I was going to ask about that. I was figuring, because one of the questions that I was dealing with, I listened to one episode and Christmas songs album, and that it had a track by Takeko Minakawa, who I like, and it has a track by Sean O'Hagan from High Llamas and Stereolab. And like, okay, I liked what I heard on the show to start with, but I had always figured there has to be a High Llamas or Sean O'Hagan Christmas song somewhere. So when I heard it, then I was like, okay, now I need to get this. And just trying to download it was a reasonable amount of work. How much of the music that you focus on your show is available either digitally or in some form to Western audiences?
Not a lot. And that's a big reason why I started buying the albums is I got really good at finding what was available to download. I'd like to say through legitimate avenues, but the bulk of this, you're not going to find legitimate downloads. It's gotten better in the last few years. There are Japanese artists who have embraced streaming and have put some of their songs online, but a lot of them either still won't do it, or they only release their albums on streaming services that are exclusive to Japan. But a lot of the older stuff, you still can't find, even on some of the shadier sites, you can't find a lot of this stuff online. So a good amount of what I cover, if you don't have the vinyl, you're not going to hear the music.
Oh, wow. So that makes yours the one place you're going to go if you're going to hear Japanese Christmas music.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you really want to hear not just the best of what has come out of Japan, but the best stuff from years ago, because the older stuff is stuff that's really hard to find. You're not going to hear it unless you tune into my podcast.
Oh, that's great. So let's back up a little bit. So you said you started because your mother had just a few Christmas records and you started buying as a result. Do you remember what the Christmas records she had were?
Oh, yeah. Prior to 1979, we had five or six albums we'd listen to. 1979 came and John Denver and the Muppets came out. And we suddenly went from listening to half a dozen different albums each year to listening to John Denver and the Muppets and then two Firestone compilations, Home for the Holidays and Popular Christmas Classics. We would put those on the record player, would stack them up, and it would just be those three over and over again. Not just all through December, but pretty much year round.
Wow.
And we really didn't, start listening to more than that until, I think it was like 1990 or so. I actually ordered the Time Life Treasury of Christmas, but the first two volumes of that. And I got that before we even had a CD player. And once I got that, we got a CD player shortly thereafter. And that's when we finally started listening to more than just those three record albums.
Wow. What did you listen to besides Christmas music?
Quite a bit. Music's always been a pretty big part of my life. So, in high school and college, the bulk of what I listened to was the local classic rock station. But my mom, she always had music playing. She had the oldie station going. She had the, the local top 40 station. So when I was a kid, there was a lot of, yacht rock's really big now, or has been for the last few years. And a lot of the stuff that shows up on the yacht rock channels and whatnot is, that's what I listened to when I was like, 7, 8, 10 years old. But then a buddy of mine got me, Billy Joel's An Innocent Man for my 11th birthday. And that's when I started buying my own music. So throughout high school and college, we would hit the local used record store all the time. And I ended up with a collection of cassettes that hundreds and hundreds of cassettes, just because you could go in there and, CDs were coming out. So cassettes were dropping in price and I could go in there, spend $10 and come out with anywhere from 15, 20 albums.
Wow. Cool. So your interest in Japanese started just out of like trying to hunt down this record that became your source. It became your way in.
Yeah. And I would keep on doing these searches and that's how I started finding out some of these other names. And then I think it was like in 2018, one of the guys online posted a link to there was an American expatriate in Indonesia who he would scour the Indonesian record markets, and he was a DJ, and he'd clean up these records the best he could, and he would post them online, and he posted a few other Japanese Christmas albums. So, you know, that kind of whetted my appetite. He had Shoji Suzuki's Swingin' Christmas, and then Latin Christmas by, or two albums named Latin Christmas. One was by Yasunori Nakajima. The other's by Charlie Ishiguro. And really cool jazz albums. And it just, you know, got me more excited about finding Akira Ishikawa, because, you know, if these albums, which were so good, were available and people were still talking about Akira Ishikawa like it was, you know, this holy grail, I was like, I've got to find this thing. And so, and that, you know, I started finding out about like the Japanese city pop, and there are a lot of the city pop artists who they put out entire Christmas albums of their own, or they would include Christmas songs on one of the regular releases. And that was something that that I thought was interesting, is that the bulk of the Japanese people have a different view of Christmas than a lot of the people in the West do. So it's, for most of the Japanese, it's not a religious holiday. It's basically, it's a secular holiday. It's essentially a second Valentine's Day. So most of the original Japanese songs are going to be love songs of some sort. And the sad love songs are one of the most, they're extremely popular over there. So a lot of the best Japanese original Christmas songs are going to be these, you know, looking for a lost love or looking back on a lost love type of Christmas songs. And because they're secular songs, it's not unusual for somebody to just throw a Christmas or Christmas theme song onto one of the regular albums.
Oh, interesting.
And yeah. And some of the coolest stuff I found, are songs that, either, didn't get single. They weren't released as singles. They were just, you know, added as a deep cut on a regular album.
Yeah.
And yeah, well, cause, Kobito Ga Santa Claus, Yumi Matsutoya's version never was released as a single. It was on her, her album, Surf and Snow Volume 1. And it just, people just fell in love with it based on its presence on the album. And it turned into this huge hit. Radio stations would play it just because, you know, people got the album and were just, they were just so obsessed with the song that it got a lot of airplay and a lot of attention, without ever seeing a release as a single.
Yeah, with Koibito Ga Santa Claus, to me, I mean, to Western ears, it doesn't sound even remotely Christmassy. Does some of this sound more Christmassy than others? Does some of it sound closer to our version of Christmas music, I should say?
Some of them do. They'll throw in essentially like Christmas tropes, like the jingle bells and whatnot. So you will hear some of the songs that right away, you know, they're a Christmas song. The absolute biggest original Japanese Christmas song is Christmas Eve by Tatsuro Yamashita. He was one of the city pop pioneers, a huge star in Japan at the time. He wrote a lot of summery songs, and he got to be known as, you know, he was the summer Christmas guy or the summer music guy. And he was getting a little annoyed with that label because people were saying, you know, that's pretty much all he's able to write. So his 1983 album Melodies, he decided he was going to show he can do something other than summer music. He was going to write not just a Christmas song, but the Christmas song. So he threw in as much Christmas imagery as he could into this little 4-minute song, and everyone knew it was going to be a hit. It sounded fantastic. It had a Christmas feel. It was just a spectacular Christmas song. So the album comes out. They put out two versions of the single on 45. You could get it on white vinyl, you could get it on black vinyl, or you could get the 12-inch picture disc, because you know he was just banking on this being the big Christmas song. And it came out and didn't even crack the top 40.
Wow.
Nobody cared. And it, for the next 5 years, you know, it would get some airplay, it would sell okay, but in 1988, Japan Rail, their Christmas commercial that year, they decided, hey, we need a good song to go along with this. Commercial songs are huge in Japan, so they went to Tatsuro Yamashita. They said, hey, can we use your Christmas Eve for our Christmas promotion this year? He said, okay. They released this commercial, and suddenly it goes nuts. The single starts selling like crazy. The following year, it's the number one selling song of the year. The year after that, number one song again. And back in 2021, the Guinness people recognized it as being it's the only song that has been in the top 100 on the Japanese charts for 36 years straight.
Wow.
It's that big over there. And so I've referred to it numerous times as the White Christmas of Japan. I mean, it is just the top Japanese Christmas song, and it's just a good song. And so now, you know, once the city pop craze ended and some of these artists got a bit older, Tatsuro Yamashita went from being the summer guy to being that Christmas music guy. He's definitely milked it for all it's worth. I mean, he's released versions of it just about every year since 1988. Every couple of years, there's a new commemorative release of it. It's one of the last songs he plays at pretty much every concert he gives now.
Oh, amazing. Two or three times now, you've mentioned city pop, and I love city pop. But for people who haven't heard it before or don't know what that reference means, can you explain city pop?
It's essentially like light rock. I'd mentioned yacht rock before. It's just kind of like, if you think back to late 70s, early 80s, the adult-oriented radio where you had, you know, Kenny Loggins, England Dan and John Ford Coley, Christopher Cross, artists like that. It's that style of music. And that type of music was really big in Japan from the late 70s up until about the early 90s. Except over there, it, as smooth as it was over here, they kind of perfected the art. And you had all these, you had a lot of artists who were putting out these just really, really great, just smooth rock albums. And so in recent years, people in the West have discovered a lot of these city pop artists, and it's gotten to be a thing with there's a lot of people on YouTube who they were putting out like city pop mixes and whatnot. And it's really neat, just smooth rock music. And it's kind of gotten a renaissance in recent years. In Japan, once their economic bubble burst in the late 80s, it kind of fell by the wayside. People kind of forgot about it. But it's gotten a resurgence over there just because the interest in it over there has resurged because of the interest in the West. Japanese listeners were kind of surprised that people in the U.S. in particular were listening to, this old 80s music from Japan. And that got them to go out and start buying the albums again. And it just it grew this entire new market for the old city pop artists. So a lot of these, a lot of them like came out of retirement or just had a resurgence and interest in their music. But when you go back and listen to some of their old albums, they put out just, in the early 80s in particular, they were putting out some of the best, Christmas music in Japan.
Oh, cool. I figured there had to be. And by the way, for people who are interested in city pop, Light in the Attic put out, I think, three volumes of, city pop under the title Pacific Breeze. Japanese City Pop, AOR and Boogie, 76 to 86. And they're really good. I like them a lot and listen to them. And it's interesting you mentioned City Pop kind of fading when the economic bubble burst, because I think of it as a very bourgeois sound. Now, you're mentioning when you talked about Christmas Eve that, Yamashita, did someone tell you that, or did you have to, or do you speak Japanese, or have you learned Japanese?
I can pick out a couple words here and there, but he's given lots of interviews about it over the years. Okay. And he's specifically stated, that was his goal. He just wanted to overload people with Christmas in that song. And not only did he do that, but that's once it did become a hit, that's what kept it so popular, is that, you listen to it and you just about every line you're hearing something that feels like Christmas.
Was there a song or an artist who kind of started Christmas music in Japan in the way that White Christmas and Bing Crosby really was the place where the American sort of Christmas music story starts?
Yeah. So prior to 1952, Christmas music and Christmas in general just was not, it wasn't a big thing in Japan. You did have artists who would put out Christmas music or songs that are now associated with Christmas. Auld Lang Syne was a huge song in Japan from like the 1880s onward. When 1930s rolled around, the emperor implemented a ban on Western music. So there wasn't a lot of Christmas music prior to that. And then from late 30s up until the end of the war, there was essentially no Christmas music. You can find a few recordings of Auld Lang Syne from that time because that was still allowed. They didn't consider that a Western song at that point because it was so ingrained into the Japanese culture. There was a recording of the first Japanese recording of Jingle Bells came out in 1941. It was not Jingle Bells, though. It was just the melody. And it was rewritten as a war song. So wow. It's about a guy going off to fight in the war. After the war, you start hearing a bit more. I've got some late 40s recordings of like Jingle Bells, a couple others. But in 1952, you had three actresses, Hibari Misora, Izumi Yukimura, and Chimi Airi. They were the three most popular young actresses in Japan at the time. And just like they would do over in the U.S., when you had a big star, you wanted to milk them for all they were worth. So not only were they big movie stars, but they were recording stars also. And in 1952, Hibari Misora came out with a Christmas song, Hattori Bachi no Christmas or Lonely Christmas. And it was just a smash. It was a huge hit. And about a month later, Chimi Airi released her version of Jingle Bells and Silent Night. And suddenly you went from having the occasional Christmas song being released to everybody wanted, you know, these two singles. So the following year, Chimi Airi released a different version of Jingle Bells and Silent Night. Izumi Yukimura released I think Jingle Bell Mambo, and then Hibari Misora had Jingle Bells and Christmas Waltz. So the three of them together, they were so popular that not only did they usher in the overall popularity of Christmas music, but I've read that because of the three of them, that is what really started the modern celebration of Christmas in Japan.
Finish up. What is your personal favorite? What's the song that completely pops you, or someone that we haven't talked about yet? Either an artist we need to know about or a song that.
I'd say one of my favorites is Merry Christmas in Summer by Kawada Band. Kazuki Kawada, he really made it big as part of C86 maybe. He was with a group called Kawada Band, and he wrote this song, Merry Xmas in Summer. I found a lot of Christmas and summer songs, and of all of them, it's the absolute best. It's one it's been covered by a bunch of different people. I've got a cover by, I can't think of an American artist appeared on a cover album of Kawada's songs and did Merry Christmas in Summer.
Oh, wow.
Robbie Neville.
Okay.
So, but it's a cool kind of summery sounding song. But essentially you've got a lot of these Christmas and summer songs that are, since Christmas is basically a, you know, second Valentine's Day over there, it's just a chance for couples to get together. You've got these songs about couples who are having their Christmas in summer, and, So that's essentially what it's about. It's, a couple having their special night in the middle of summer instead of on Christmas Eve.
Thanks to Scott Leopold for the time and the talk, and the leads for further exploration for us. You can find Holly Jolly Xmasu online, or on the major podcasting platforms, and on Facebook. Thanks for listening, If you have any thoughts, questions, comments, or tips, you can find me at 12 Songs of Christmas on Facebook as well. In the show, Scott mentioned an American version of Merry Christmas and Summer by Robbie Neville. I had to admit, I had to Google Neville to remember what he sang, C'est la vie, in 1986. But his version seemed like a good way to wrap up this special episode. Here's Merry Christmas and Summer. Talk to you next week.
That summer love's been part of history. I've been crying Christmas and summer. Oh, you've seen the names and the hearts in the sand. It's true, girl.